And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy!
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds!
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
Welcome to 5000 to 1, the Athletic's Leicester City podcast. I'm Rob Tanner. Joining me again this week is Leicester City legend and former captain, Matt Elliott. How you doing, Matt?
Good, Rob. Thank you. Looking forward to our chat as always.
Oh, we've got plenty to discuss as ever. And just before we get into the running order of this week, I'd just like to make a little announcement that if you subscribe to The Athletic, you can give another subscription as a gift for free. It's the perfect present for any football fan this Christmas. Enjoy great analysis and in-depth features from the very best football writers. Do I include myself in that? As well as ad-free versions of all our podcasts. Wave goodbye to 2020 and say hello to 2021 by sharing the gift of The Athletic's unrivaled football coverage for the whole year. It's the perfect present for yourself and someone else. Just go to theathletic.co.uk/LeicesterPod. That's theathletic.co.uk/LeicesterPod and sign up. So we're going to be discussing this week the Zoya Luhansk defeat, a trip that turned into a bit of a disaster. We'll be reflecting on more positive things about Sheffield United, the win there, back to winning ways for Brendan Rodgers' men. A few of the little talking points from that game, including Leicester City's tendency to concede from set pieces, which I'm going to really pick on your knowledge of the defensive arts for that one. And we'll also be looking at some of the youngsters in the academy who have been doing quite well in the under-21s. And finally, we'll be reflecting on a feature that I've just had published on the Athletic website, an interview with former CEO Barry Pierpoint, who was a very colourful and controversial character during the late 90s at Leicester City. So let's get underway then, Matt. Zoya, I must admit, it's one of those I've really missed going away for the European adventures because we had such a fantastic time in the Champions League. But that trip to Ukraine wasn't one I was relishing. And it turns out that it wasn't the best of trips for Brendan and the boys either, really. I mean, not only did they lose for the first time in the Europa League, but also it was supposed to be the big comebacks for several of the lads that have been missing, the key players. Charles Soyuncu, Wilfred Ndidi and Ricardo Pereira. And Ricardo hadn't played for 8 months. They made the comeback, but it all turned very sour in that first half, didn't it? With Soyuncu limping off before 15 minutes was up with what looks like a small reoccurrence of his groin problem. And then Ricardo, coming back from an ACL, had to come off at 45 minutes at half time when the plan was to give him 75 minutes. Because he'd picked up another little groin strain. And Ndidi did come through it okay. But we did ask Brendan what the issue was, and he decided that they were going to take Ricardo off as a precaution, even though he'd also got this groin issue, because of the conditions there, because it was so cold and the pitch was slippery. In hindsight, probably wasn't the best fixture for them to make their comebacks in, really. But then what fixture is? I mean, we'd already seen Ricardo had come through 58 minutes in the under-23s. Yeah, it turned out to be a bad night for Leicester all round on that one.
Unfortunately so, yes. First and foremost, I'm with you on the fact or the disappointment that we haven't been able to get involved. Of course, the supporters haven't in these European away days, and as you say, in the Champions League, it was such a wonderful experience, wasn't it, for everyone concerned, and a nice mix of environments as well. It would have been, you know, with Braga and Portugal, AEK over in Athens. Ukraine had its own appeal in a certain way, but eventually, yeah, I wasn't too displeased not to make it at the time of year, etc.
Very cold, I'm told. It was freezing over there.
Yeah, exactly. Not that it's tropical over here at the moment, but anyway, but onto the football. It didn't go to plan, to say the least, did it? Yeah, it won the result, as you mentioned. I think not too much of a blow, really. I think the biggest disappointment was the injuries to the players that came back there, because, you know, Leicester went into it with a bit of a mix and match lineup, didn't they? And that was a luxury they could be afforded because they'd done the hard work in terms of qualifying previously, you know, in the opening four games. But now they've still got work to do in the final game at home against AEK. I expect them to complete the job, but you know, it was going to be a difficult situation. I think Zoya were probably always going to be stiffer opposition at home, weren't they? You know, they underperformed and sort of finding their feet maybe a little bit in European competition. And that was sort of a concern when they turned over the result against AEK. You know, they sort of came from nowhere. And you thought, when they won away from home, you thought, hang on, this is going to be a tough game, whatever team Leicester put out. But then with the nature of the selection, you know, it was never going to be an easy night, but it turned out to be much more difficult than could have been predicted, really. But the main blows, or the biggest blows, I think, despite the defeat, was Soyuncu as well. Of the two, he seemed to have the more severe setback. I know Brendan Rodgers has said it's not as bad as first feared. I'm not sure if it's exactly the same injury, but it looked in the same, certainly the same area. You could see the frustration in his face, you know, the disappointment, all the hard work that he's put in to come back. Ricardo as well, again, that was sort of played down a little bit, wasn't it, initially? I think maybe they were hoping it wasn't anything too sinister, and seemingly that's not the case. But I did wonder when he came off at half-time, because I knew he'd played longer than that for the development squad, hadn't he? Only a week or so before. So you thought, if he's going to play, get more minutes than that. So that was straight away. So the alarm bell's ringing. But by all accounts, a little bit of a niggly groin pull, which is, you know, you sometimes, and it was often said, you get, when you've had a serious injury, you get little sort of mini subsidiary ones away on your rehab, don't you? So hopefully that's just a consequence of that. Nothing too damaging, and he'll be able to get back in the semi-near future. But as you say about the wisdom of playing out, you know, putting the lads straight back into that game in those circumstances after travelling in the cold environment. But when do you play them? Rather that, I suppose, than plunging them straight into sort of the hurly-burly of a Sheffield United away fixture at Bramall Lane, when it's a little bit blood and thunder, maybe physically very demanding. You can't really win, I suppose, can you?
No, exactly. I suppose he wanted those guys back as soon as he possibly could as well, with the situation at that time going into that game. They hadn't been in the best of form. If they had lost at Sheffield United, it would have been five games without a win, which would have equaled the longest spell the side had gone without a victory under Brendan Rodgers. So, yeah, I wouldn't talk about pressure or anything like that, but certainly it mounts up when you're not used to not claiming victories. I should imagine psychologically it does start to mount up, and I suppose the return of those guys. Well, I mean, we were looking ahead of the Zoya game and thinking of all positives about these players coming back, and the fact that a victory would secure the group as well, and then they would avoid the big boys in the knockout stages. But they went to Bramall Lane after that with the injuries that had occurred in Ukraine, and it was still a bit of trepidation really about Leicester going to Sheffield United, even though Sheffield United were bottom of the table and without a win. It seemed to be one of those banana skins for Leicester City that they always tend to trip up on. And it looked like it might be another difficult day. Ayoze Perez, let's talk about Ayoze though first, because he hadn't featured in his starting lineup for 11 games, and he come in and got a goal to get them underway. I mean, that's fantastic for him and for Brendan, that the Perez is going to have a bit of a boost of confidence. But also the team, on the back of the fact that last minute, Maddison through ball, Vardy finish, demolishes the corner flag, and Leicester are back up and running again in victories. But start with the Ayoze. I mean, he needed that, didn't he?
Oh, he certainly did, yeah. I mean, he's been right out of the picture, hasn't he, of late. And I think Brendan Rodgers has shown perseverance with him and patience. I think, like most people, Brendan Rodgers quite clearly sees abilities and attributes in Ayoze Perez, but it doesn't always come to the fore, do they? For whatever reason, he sort of flits in and out of games. He shows promise and potential and shows moments of quality. Like, his touch is nice, good movement, intelligent sort of awareness. He's got, when he's on form, he's got an eye for creating assists and finishing goals himself, or when he's on top of his game. But he doesn't provide consistently enough, does he? And I think maybe other elements to his game, you know, the sort of little bit of a lack of intensity, a little bit lightweight at times, and sort of disappears in games, doesn't he? And I think that little bit of a bolt from the blue, really, because, you know, it wasn't that long ago he was playing regularly, was it? But he's been out of the equation, and I thought he did very well, actually, first half. He sort of knitted things together well, picked up good positions, as I said, and, you know, supplied a couple of opportunities, one particular for Jamie Vardy. And obviously got his goal, didn't he? You know, slightly fortunate the way it came to him. But if you're in and around the right areas, sooner or later something will fall. But he's back again as a, well, he's an option, isn't he, for Brendan Rodgers. And I think he's too good a player to be discarded to, you know, as an outcast. As sort of Damari Gray seems to have been to a degree, but maybe this is a bit of a, you know, kick up the backside that he needs.
Well, let's talk about Brendan's options in attack then, because he seems to have changed tack this season. And last season he seemed to like the out-and-out wide man on one side, which was Harvey Barnes invariably, and on the other side he liked the inverted wide man, which was Perez. This lately we've seen him go one way or the other. He's either gone with Maddison and Pratt or Maddison and Perez, as he did at Sheffield United. Two very narrow. They're not wide players. I really wouldn't like to call them wide players, really, because looking at their heat maps and stuff, they played very centrally. And yeah. Then in Zoya, he went with the two out-and-out wingers in Barnes and Under.
Yeah, it's a good point, actually. Whether that's sort of intentional in terms of a tactical ploy, or is it, you know, sometimes he's picking on just like the personnel who he deems fit to play that particular week, or is it because certain oppositions? Be interesting to get inside the mind of Brendan and you know, ask him what his selection process actually is. You know, sometimes do we look too deep into it sometimes, or is it, you know, intentional game by game? But I think maybe, say, there is a tendency on a couple of occasions you thought maybe it would be Barnes and Maddison, like you say, sort of, you know, two different types of attacking players. But I think maybe he's happier having the likes of, say, Maddison and Perez stroke Pratt on occasion when they play the back three, knowing that there's sort of more of an emphasis on the wing backs or an ability for the wing backs to bomb forward regularly, more than if, for instance, he was playing sort of maybe a 4-2-3-1, the fullbacks, yes, they would get forward, but maybe not as much because they've got to sort of hang fire a little bit. Possibly that's a little bit of his thinking, you know, when he plays that back three, those wing-backs, whoever it may be, because it gets chopped and changed around a little bit, doesn't it? More licensed to play as almost wingers, pretty much. It hasn't always been effective, though, has it? You know, I think that was maybe the intention, but against Fulham, I think that was very much the case. But the emphasis was on the wing-backs to go and make the difference, but they got nullified, didn't they? Fulham matched them up, and then it was almost a plan B.
And plus as well, the wing-backs at the moment, without Castagne and without Pereira, they're not necessarily attacking fullbacks. I think Luke Thomas has got that ability, but James Justin is more of a natural defender. So, I mean, Mark Brighton coming in, obviously we know he's got attacking tendencies as well. So when you're relying on your fullbacks for the width, you really need them to be of an attacking mindset. And I don't think he's had that at his disposal for a while.
No, and I think Liverpool, you know, rely, obviously, on they rely on all components of their team, but there's much emphasis on the fullbacks, but with the greatest of respect, you know, Robertson and Trent Arnold are probably on a slightly different level at this moment in time, aren't they? But it's effective for them. But I think also it's a little bit, apart from Jamie Vardy, obviously, aside, I'm not, and James Maddison has to be in the front line somewhere, whether it's in a front three or maybe a three behind Jamie Vardy. That's Maddison's best position, I think, in that number 10 role in centrally. But don't always have the luxury for that if he wants to play. You can't have everything, can you? He wants to play the back three, and then he's only got two in midfield. So the point I'm trying to get to is that I'm not sure at this moment, taking form into account, etc., he's not quite, he hasn't got a settled attacking lineup there. Yeah, I think one minute he fancies Barnes, but then Barnes has been a bit in and out, as has Pratt. Pratt hasn't really sort of nailed down a position. And Perez, we spoke about. Under's still finding his feet. Maddison's, well, I wouldn't say he's coming back from injury now. He's played regular enough now. But he's sort of in and out with performances, and but he's always going to be involved. But, you know, as well as rotating as because of the amount of games, I think also, even if the games were more spread out, Brendan Rodgers hasn't got a nailed down starting 11 at the moment.
Let's talk about Maddison, because he is the guy that he's trying to get into that side, and it might be one of the reasons why he's playing with more narrow support players for Vardy at the moment. But there was an interesting stat that came out. I mean, it was a fantastic pass for Jamie Vardy for the winner at Bramall Lane. Typical Maddison. When I say typical Maddison, that was his first assist for nearly a year. Now, yeah, you look at his stats, and he is creating chances and invariably assists. You know, you need someone to put them away for them to be classed as assists. So that is surprising for a player of his quality that was his first assist for nearly a year.
Yeah, it sounds dramatic, doesn't it, on the face of it? I mean, obviously there's extenuating circumstances and lockdown.
Missing games, lack of games, that injury.
Big injury, yeah, relatively big injury as well, which kept him out. But even so, it does take you aback a bit. But one of the reasons why, I'm sure he's set up a good few chances, just that haven't been converted. But you would think just a link up with him and Vardy would have occurred numerous times, wouldn't you, within that period?
Yeah.
But, I mean, he spoke after the game, didn't he, about, I suppose he was sort of preempting any remarks that came in his way about not providing more official assists. Because, you know, he said that sometimes, you know, he tries things, so he gives the ball away a few times, you know, it doesn't always come off, which is fine. And I don't know, you look at it, I think maybe possibly guilty at times of having too many touches and slowing it down a little bit.
He comes deep a lot these days as well, Matt, doesn't he? When he comes looking for the ball when he doesn't get it. When he's not in the game for 5 minutes, he does start to tend to drop deep.
Yeah. What license is he given by Brendan Rodgers? You know, does Brendan say, listen, be patient, just stay in that 10 role where you're really effective and you can do that lovely half turn, you know, where he draws the opposition player and just moves away and then plays the ball? That's him at his best. He has other abilities, of course. Or does Brendan like him, encourage him to get on the ball? Because he can sort of pull the strings a little bit, can't he? But sometimes maybe when he does come deeper, let's say a few, two, three, four touches, and the opposition gets set up defensively, don't they? When it's done sort of with speed and in dangerous areas and in sort of instinctively, that's when he's most effective. So maybe he could change that sort of side of his play, couldn't he? And become a bit more disciplined in advanced areas.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Well, let's talk about another stat that came out of that Sheffield United game when Ollie McBurney headed home the equaliser 2 minutes after Perez's opener. That was the seventh goal Leicester City had conceded the Premier League from set pieces, the sixth from a corner, which is by far the highest in the Premier League. They were the second best at defending set pieces last season with the same system that they're using this season with the mix of zonal and man marking, the four across the six-yard box in the zonal marking, the three picking up the runners. But it's not working for them this season. Now, Brendan was asked after the game for his reasons why, and he thought, well, it's quite clear. It's because we're missing Sun Tzu, we're missing Ndidi, two natural defenders, two players that attack the ball. But at the start of the season, when Sun Tzu was playing, they were looking a bit dodgy on defending set pieces. And it's also, since they lost Sun Tzu as well, there just seems to be a lack of confidence now. When they concede a corner, a set piece, you can look around, they're looking a bit nervous. They still believe in the system they've got, but it must be psychologically, they must be thinking, oh no, here we go again.
Well, it's getting to that stage, isn't it, where it's becoming probably more than a concern. Yeah, and you can see the sort of tension. I don't know if it's imagined or whatever, but you know, when a set piece is conceded now, there is a bit of sort of anxiety, it seems. And that's natural. When you do start conceding a few goals, for whatever reason, from set pieces, and then you get a little bit jumpy, you get edgy, you get sort of almost too determined to make it not happen again. And you go away from sort of your natural way of defending in those situations. But it is so hard to put a finger on it exactly. As you mentioned there, similar approach over this campaign, last campaign, last season, pretty effective. Although, to be honest, I was never that secure. I was always a little bit worried because it's generally that they're not the biggest side in the world, are they? You've got, you know, whatever the selection is, but certainly Ndidi makes a difference. Soyuncu, not at all a centre-half. He's aggressive, but if he came up someone who's a genuine powerhouse aerially, I think even he was struggling, even though he has a good leap. Johnny Evans, decent in the air. But again, he's not someone who, you know, he's more than capable, don't get me wrong, but he's not overly sort of aggressive, is he, in his aerial challenges. But and other than that, they're all sort of trying to do the job, aren't they? And sort of scampering around a little bit. Jamie Vardy comes back and does a good job defensively.
Yeah, he screens the near post, doesn't he, Jamie? He's been doing that role for a while now under Brendan.
Yeah, you have to give him credit there. And Kasper Schmeichel as well, he's not one who actually comes piling through bodies and claims, does he? But I think you just sometimes get into these little periods, though. I remember it ourselves. I mean, you know, in my era, we had sort of five lumps, 6'3" plus. So it was always beneficial at both ends of the pitch. So we had that sort of luxury. But even then, sometimes we went through periods where we were conceding. We remember, you know, being on the training pitch saying, should we go zone or should we go man to man? And we tried both. You know, even with the size of players we had, and they were all quite aggressive in the air, we could go and attack the ball, but it just didn't work for periods. And you just sort of got yourself through it by sticking to basic principles, really. We never tried the semi-zonal, as is often introduced these days. And like everything, it's got pros and cons, hasn't it? I think Leicester get caught out a few times. You know, for instance, against Sheffield United, it was Tielemans who was sort of assigned to McBurney. Fofana and Evans, I think their intention is to, okay, Tielemans will unsettle and one of those two will come and win the ball and have the room to come and attack it. But Sheffield United were quite clever there. They obstructed Fofana and Evans' movement as well with other players. And then McBurney was basically up against Tielemans, who wasn't even focusing on the ball. He was just trying to obstruct, really. And Fofana and Evans couldn't, because of the quality of the delivery, didn't have time to actually come out and break through that obstruction that they were receiving. Now, it needs about four or five things to come off for Sheffield United, but unfortunately they did, and Leicester came up short. And I don't know, end of the day, it's just someone's got to be positive in that danger zone, judge the flight of the ball properly, and attack it with aggression. You know, all the formulas in the world can't guarantee, you know, you're going to defend that. You just need to be collectively aggressive and at least put off the opposition you're not going to win it cleanly.
I mean, because we have seen it several times. I mean, we saw Tielemans up against Firmino at Liverpool. We saw Madison had Ake at Man City, and it was the same outcome. I think you're right. I think it's going to be, somebody's got to take responsibility, and it's probably going to be one of the zonal marking lads that come and attack the ball. Anything around 8-9 yards out, centre of the goal, go and attack it. I mean, if it's further out, like the Ake one, then really, you know, the guys marking him have got to try and obstruct him and make it as hard as possible.
There's a little bit of a problem. Little bit of a problem, just quickly, Rob. So with the when you do zone or semi-zone, teams are clever. You know, they'll isolate the main defenders, if you like, or as Sheffield United did there, even though it was in the mix, in the, you know, central area of the penalty area, that they were still obstructed, stroke impeded, getting to the ball for Fofana and Evans, and then it's an issue. Then you've got one of the, if you're not directly picking up one of the opposition's big boys, and or also I've seen teams hang it up, like James Justin would be at the far end of the 6-yard box in the zonal position. That teams would hang it up far stick, and so you'd have a big 6'3", 4" centre half crashing on top of James Justin, who will compete, but it's a little bit of a mismatch, and that's been a problem as well. So Teams are very particular in how they approach the set pieces.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's the little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms and restrictions apply.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Well, let's move on to the youngsters at Leicester City who've been having a good time of it of late. I mean, the Europa League gives Brendan Rodgers an opportunity to include some of the youngsters in the squad because of the size of the bench you're permitted in the competition. And we saw young Shane Flynn, left-sided player, and 16-year-old Ben Nelson, a young centre-back, going with the party to Ukraine. But also this week, the under-21s are now the only Premier League side left in the Papa John's Trophy. Fantastic title trophy, the Papa John's Trophy. They're through on penalties after knocking out Salford last night. Let's talk about academies, because Leicester's academy has been very successful. We've seen Ben Chilwell come through, and obviously they've got made £50 million out of him. Hamza Chowdhury, you got Luke Thomas, Harvey Barnes. It's been very productive for them, but a lot of clubs, especially down in the Championship now, are looking at scrapping them. And Birmingham City have announced they're scrapping their academy. We know Huddersfield announced, even when they were in the Premier League a couple of years ago, that they were only going to reduce it to eight under-18s and under-23s. But it's been such a fantastic source of young talent for Leicester City. And you've worked in the academy as well, haven't you, Matt? We've done a bit of coaching over the years. It is a good setup there.
Oh, Leicester City is amongst the best probably in the country. If anything, only going to get better with the facilities that are being provided now, with a new training ground, etc. It's a major part of the club as well, as everyone's seen, hasn't they? You know, with the results of the players coming through. I think Leicester City have to be applauded as well for, you know, giving younger players the opportunity and having that youth emphasis, because it's not easy, you know, when you're looking to strive and progress in the Premier League. Some of the temptation is to bring in some big, fully-fledged, established players. And obviously that's expensive. It makes economic sense to do it the Leicester City way, as well as large emphasis on recruitment, of course. But, you know, to keep the levels of performance up, as they do, is some achievement. But I think, that particular crop of players, say the ones who are involved at the moment or recently have been Ben Chilwell, Harvey Barnes, Hamza Chowdhury, that's the age group that I was involved in loosely. Not that I had any great effect on their progression, but it was just there's a whole clutch of players at that age group who were and still are very capable of making a living in the game at the very least, if not playing at Leicester City level. A couple of players who are still there now, Leighton Nduku, Admiral Musque as well, and
Darnell Johnson. Night.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. They're still involved at the club. And even at their age now, 21, 22, they're still very much prospects. They still have that potential, although they need to realise it sometime soon at whatever level. There's a lot to be said for the academies. But sometimes, you know, it can be a difficult situation because, as we know, not everyone reaches the promised land, and that can be difficult to deal with when you put so much time and effort and years of your life into it. So like everything, I mean, Leicester City are as good as any in the country, as I say, but things still need looking at, don't they? I think, you know, in terms of, I won't go too deep on it now, but we've heard some of the horror stories of late that can happen, and you just need to be mindful of that within the academy system. But as you say about Birmingham, you know, straight away, to strike off their academy, I think Huddersfield did it not so long ago when they were even in the Premier League. It alarms you a little bit initially, doesn't it? You think, you know, why the hell would they do that? Especially Birmingham, you say they've had some people going through there, haven't they? And Jude Bellingham, of course, Damari. Yeah, exactly. Damari Gray. Nathan Redmond, who you spoke about to me before we came on the show, yeah, amongst others. So there's revenue there, but there's also a lot of outlay, and people will have their own reasons for doing it. But it does seem a shame if I don't know what the actual reasons are. Is it economical?
I think it's financial. I think they're struggling so much that they decided to put the resources into the first team and try and feed the first team with under-18s, under-23s. But, somebody's got to develop those youngsters up to that age group, haven't they? So who's going to do that when the pro clubs, if they all decide to follow suit below Premier League level? Who else is going to do it?
It does seem strange. It does seem strange because... Yeah, to a degree, you can understand it with the finances the way they are and the way that COVID-19 situation has affected everybody, across the board. But you would think Birmingham, with the owners they had, they would be able to sort of manage the situation to a degree. And, and down the line, even if the owners aren't looking particularly long term, but down the line, even in the medium term, the young players, prospects, are going to get snapped up by other clubs in the vicinity, aren't they? And in all likelihood, end up appearing for the likes of Aston Villa, Wolverhampton and West Bromwich Albion, amongst others, rather than Birmingham City. Surely that would be a consequence and they're going to miss out. It's a gamble they decide to take, I suppose. They think it's worth it and they think they can manage it in a different way, it's wheeling and dealing. These days, there's lots of free transfers in the lower regions, aren't they? And I suppose they think it's manageable with the lack of transfer fees around as well, that players can come and go. Dealings can be done in that way.
Yeah, certainly controversial. But let's end on a colourful and controversial character that you know very well from your time playing for Leicester City. I interviewed him because he's released a book looking back at his time at Leicester City, nearly 9 years, Barry Pierpoint, who was first the director of marketing and then became the CEO. Towards the end of his time at the club, he became known, they were publicly known as the Gang of Four, four directors who, after a boardroom split, briefly took over the club. But Martin O'Neill sided with John Elson, the chairman, and the other directors, and they eventually had to leave the club. But it was a dark period for Barry because he was telling me that at one particular game he was driving up the M1 to Leeds and the police followed him with the lights flashing and he thought he was speeding. He thought he was going to get pulled over for speeding and they said, "Sir, are you Barry Pierpoint, the CEO of Leicester City?" And he said, "I am." He said, "We've had a credible threat against your life. We're going to have to escort you to the game." So he was living in this era when people were throwing bricks through his window and threatening him and he just got all out of hand because of the Gang of Four and the boardroom split. But he was also party to a number of initiatives at Leicester City that people still fondly think of now. Fox Leisure, their own kit, the branded kit that he introduced, the development of the Carling Stand at Filbert Street, and the family fun nights, football nights, the Monday night reserve games as well down at Filbert Street. And I know he was in the process as well of trying to take Leicester City to a new 40,000 seater stadium at Bede Island, just north of where the King Power Stadium is now. In the end, they decided to go to the site of the King Power and go for 32,000. But very interesting to hear his little tales from that period, Matt. And you obviously were at the club at the time. Can you remember around that period? And can you remember the controversy around the Gang of Four and all that public fallout within the boardroom at the time?
I certainly do, yeah. But we were sort of on the periphery of things. But you used to, obviously used to hear of the situation at the club and the different wranglings that were going on. I'll be a little bit careful here, but that death threat wasn't from Martin O'Neill, was it, by any chance? Because I know him and Barry were at loggerheads for various reasons, and many of which escaped me, but I know there was a friction between the two of them, for goings on, for suggestions that were being offered, etc., and difference of opinion, shall we say. Martin used to come back fuming sometimes, sort of raging, and just, but we knew that Barry Pierpont was the primary reason, I don't quite know what the differences were. You know, I don't know if they were questioning Martin's management style or whether it was the way forward for the club, etc. But yeah, it was strange times really, because as players, we just sort of you largely just get on with business, you know, and yeah, thankfully it didn't directly affect our workings too much. But you were aware that there were, you know, simmering issues within the club, the framework of the club itself, and, you know, quite serious implications as well in terms of, you know, who's in charge and would there be an overthrow of the hierarchy, etc., or however dramatic you wanted to term it. But we knew that Barry Pierpont was a big figure in proceedings, that's for sure. And I think he probably, I mean, at one stage, I remember the Pierpont out banners that were held up at one of the games and over a period of time. And again, even at that time, I wasn't entirely sure why, but we weren't surprised, because I think from memory, I think from a supporter's point of view, I think it was more to do with the fact that he was upsetting Martin. And
yeah, Martin was a god to the fans. Yeah.
Yeah, anyone who upset Martin was the devil. And and as players, we thought the same, really. But obviously, that wasn't quite the case. So, yeah, interesting. Say Barry was involved with the Fox Leisure. Everyone remembers that. That was some achievement, really, isn't it, Premier League?
Well, you can still buy the retro shirts now from the Fox Leisure days.
Yeah, yeah. People still got a lot of fondness for that kit, haven't they, in that particular time. And rightly so, producing your own, isn't it? We have an attachment there. The Carling Stand, of course, was a pride and joy at Filbert Street, wasn't it? You know, opposite the cow shed on the other side, it was something to be proud of, that and the cop down at Filbert Street. You know, again, if he was involved with that. And I do remember the fun nights, family fun nights, as you say, the reserves. And I used to go down on the odd occasion myself, but it was more of an event back then. You know, trying to get people involved on all aspects of the club. So, yeah, Barry's been quite sort of not a volatile character, that would be the wrong description, really, but he's been quite an interesting, charismatic character, isn't he? For sure. And, you know, a lot happens around him, shall we say, and he's quite flamboyant in his way. I still see him very occasionally at various functions, and he's always got plenty to say. Always quite an interesting character, that's for sure. But I've seen the book, and hopefully he does well with it.
Yeah, I mean, I spent an hour speaking to him, and it was very colourful that hour as well. There was plenty of stories in there, some of them which I could not print. But
he's not shy of an opinion or two, is he?
Absolutely. And those readers of The Athletic can read that feature now. It's on our website and our app, as are all our other content about Leicester City as well. Matt, thank you very much again this week. Brilliant to have you on again and get your thoughts on the events at Leicester City. And I know we're going to be speaking again next week, because it's getting to get very, very busy coming up to Christmas.
Certainly is. Yeah, pleasure as always, Rob. Catch up soon.
And thank you to all you listeners. And don't forget, you can leave us a review on your preferred podcast providers, and we'll be joining you again next week.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.